Part 3. Conquer. When falls the iron rain, be brave, be brave. Lorn au Arcos. Chapter 25. Praetors. We are undone. That is what the Arch-Governor of Callisto has said. Arch-Governor Nero au Augustus peers around the table to see if we understand the gravity of his words. The aquiline angles of his face catch the ship's war room lights, hollowing his cheeks and giving him the look of a falcon peering down its beak. And why should he not? The Corps rallies against us. Neptune is in far orbit. Vespasian's ships will be 6 months in coming to reinforce us. All this while my own bannermen hide behind their shields in their cities on Mars, sending only their second and third born to aid us. He looks at the two far members of the table. Their feebleness cripples us. And now I sit here in council with my praetors, my men of arms, and what grand schemes do they devise?
Run. That's what they say. We fled Luna a month ago, and we've not stopped running since, because the Sovereign was crafty, and our forces beat us to Mars. This is not how I thought it would go. But then again, none of this is my damn fault. Cautious bloody fools surround the Arch-Governor. Gold's too frightened to lose all the favour and power they've gained in the past to risk any of it now. Worse, they squeeze me out. Alliances form against me. You can see it in their eyes, in their shoulders. My gain is their loss. Even those who followed my lead on Luna, even those I saved from certain death. They do the same to the Jackal, and they think it a victory he is not here in this room bickering with them. Their mistake.
I sit 10 chairs down from my master at the massive cherry oak table in the war room of his flagship, the 6-kilometer dreadnought Invictus. The ceiling is 40 meters above us, the room overly grand and imposing. A carved relief of a lion glares out from the center of the table. Over 40 places are empty. Trusted advisers gone, having abandoned Augustus like rats from a sinking ship. Those with us are Pliny, Praetor Cavax, his son Daxo, and a 50 of Augustus's most powerful praetors, legates, and bannermen. They do not glare at me. Nothing so childish. These Golds preside over 1 billion souls, so they simply ignore me and push doubt into Augustus about my ideas.
Are we in agreement, then, with the Arch-Governor of Callisto? Are we undone? Augustus demands. Before any can answer, the grand doors hiss open, retracting into the marbled walls. Mustang strolls through, tossing an apple hand to hand.
Apologies for my tardiness.
She beams at her father, approaches him and gives him a too gracious kiss on his lion-haired ring.
I sent word over an hour ago.
Augustus says.
Oh?
Mustang spares a look at Pliny.
I must have missed it. I only knew you were here because I went looking for my brother to play a game of chess.
She laughs at the joke. Only the Telemannuses get it. Sighing, she makes her way to the far end of the table, squeezing Daxo and Cavax on their shoulders as she passes. Cavax greets her with rumbling, warm words. She sits and kicks her military boots up.
Did I miss anything?
Of course I didn't. Dithering as always. Her father's cheek twitches.
This is not a stable.
He eyes her boots. Sighing, she brings her boots down and shines the apple on her black sleeve. She's one of a very few women in the room. Agrippina au Julii should be here, but It was her betrayal that depleted Augustus's fleet of the numbers he needed to capture Mars quickly, and it was her betrayal that made Augustus put men on Victra to make sure her loyalty to him is true. It took nearly all of my clout with the man to keep her out of the brig. We've been chased from the core worlds here, far beyond the orbital path of Mars. Our asteroid mining operations are seized, Augustus's assets frozen, and his cities, those that did not surrender already to the Sovereign, are besieged. Not to mention there are bounties on our heads. The old men don't like that I have the second highest bounty behind Augustus.
Before we were interrupted, Augustus continues, I believe someone was justifying their
Snap. His voice falls away as Mustang takes a loud bite of her apple. She looks around at the annoyed faces. I stifle a laugh.
My liege, Pliny leans forward. I'm afraid there is no alternative but to continue our tactical retreat. If things continue in this manner, we will lose, and you, my liege, will be tried for...
Snap. He flinches before finishing... treason. He looks around the table to his bought and paid for allies.
There is but one path available to us.
Continue to run with our fleet till Vespasian's reinforcements arrive from Neptune.
Augustus murmurs, in 6 months. The Politico nods.
Or surrender.
Would that you had killed Octavia when you had the chance, boy,
Kavax says.
If I had, everyone here would be dead, I reply.
Daxo nods. He meant no offence. Wistful thinking.
Why didn't you kill Octavia?
Pliny squints at me skeptically.
I couldn't have. I was in a room with Aja Argrimus. Perhaps if you were there, you could have done better, but I'm a mortal man.
The praetors who know their business laugh.
Even Lorne our Arcos wouldn't have dared.
Augustus mutters,
and I once saw him kill Stained without a razor. Darrow did as he could.
He turns his attention on me.
Do you think we should run now as well?
It makes you look weak.
We are weak, Pliny replies. But this makes him look wise.
Wise men read books about history, Pliny. Strong men write them.
Stop quoting Lorne our Arcos,
Pliny snaps.
I thought you'd be open to all knowledge.
Your many years of life no doubt make you an authority on innumerable things,
Pliny says melodically.
Do recycle more maxims from old warriors, so we may learn more of life and wisdom.
This isn't about me, dear Pliny, so cut the ad hominems.
I gesture to the arch-governor.
This is about our liege. This is about his fate.
How theatrical of you to note, Darrow.
Augustus rubs his eyes, tired of our bickering.
The young can't help but be eager, Pliny continues. But we must remember there is no dishonour in prudence, my liege. 6 months' delay is a small price to pay for victory.
He splays out his long-fingered hands.
In fact, time is our friend. Octavia cannot afford to scour the solar system for us, not with the Senate so divided at home. Her grasping hand will be like iron. It will rake along the backs of the other arch-governors, and it will not be long before those who follow her begin to chafe at her orders. They will learn why we fight against her, namely that she is not our representative, but is instead an empress. This will give us time, which will give us power, which will give us the ability to sue for profitable peace.
Peter Kavax slams his fist on the table.
piss on this!
A titan of a man, he's carved more from rock than flesh. His neck is so thick that I couldn't wrap even my hands around it. Unlike most Gauls, he has shaved his head and permitted his beard to grow. It is thick and dyed blood red. When the lights dim, it glows like a brand in the night. Only three fingers remain on his left hand. They say his son Daxo bit them off as a child. Though Daxo always smiles and, with his soft voice, suggests that it was his younger brother, Pax. The Telemannuses are the only preachers in the room not beholden, in one way or another, to Pliny. I like Kavax.
It chafes my balls. This pixie talk chafes my balls,
Kavax sneers.
We should not be in this position. Give me leave, my liege, and I will take 1,000 of my guard to treat with the cowards who did not answer your summons.
Apologies, my darling,
he whispers to his favourite fox, Sophocles, a red-gold, sharp-eared thing that flinches at the loud sound of its master's voice. Sophocles eats little jelly beans from Kavax's massive palm. We wait for Kavax's attention to return to his words.
You were saying, Kavax?
Augustus prods with a quick smile he reserves for his favourites.
Father,
Daxo nudges the larger man. Kavax looks up, startled.
Oh, and when their balls are ripped off and made to dangle from their own earlobes, others will remember you are ruler of Mars, and they will beg to aid you, Nero.
Satisfied, he goes back to feeding Sophocles jelly beans.
And they will know that we few lords were found loyal,
Daxo quickly adds, waving to the girls around the table who nod appreciatively. Daxo sucks on a stick of cinnamon. He smiles even more than Pax, though his are half as grand and twice as mischievous. The only frown I've yet seen on his face was when he saw the jackal at the gala. That particular grudge will not fade, nor should it. The jackal took their Pax. In reply, the Telemannuses demanded his head. In turn, Augustus banished the jackal from Mars. But now, war brings new complications, new necessities. And the jackal seems to have been forgiven in his father's eyes, if not those of the Telemannuses. I watch them carefully. They are not stupid, despite the guise they enjoy wearing. I only hope they remain ignorant of my alliance with Pax's killer.
All should be a reminder that fealty is not easily cast off.
Daxo finishes, his voice astonishingly cordial.
A visit from my father and my sisters would remind other bannermen of their duties to you in times of war.
He tilts his head playfully, allowing us to admire the workmanship of the gold angels engraved into his scalp.
It is in the Telemannus nature to leave an impression. Perhaps it would swell our ranks. My thunder lords,
Augustus smiles. Ever eager for violence? He traces a finger along the back of his long left hand. But no. That reminder must wait.
Punishment can only be doled out in victory. It would look petty, the sad flailing of a drowned man, considering my fleet is scattered and my legions trapped behind the shields of my cities.
He looks to Pliny and asks how the rest of our trade allies fare. I sneak a glance at Mustang. She notices and raises an eyebrow at me, wondering when we shall begin.
All our politicos have been received,
Pliny says slowly. Today Pliny wears a very serious coat of black lipstick.
As you know, my politicos and I conferred after we fled from Luna, and we developed a rather advanced theoretical breakdown of potential alliance shifts.
With computers?
Kavax asks with a booming laugh.
With Computers, Pliny continues, irritated. Simulations were performed by my green analysts. Of the Galilean moons, Io, Callisto, Ganymede, and Europa, none will cast the lot in with us, neither in simulation nor actuality.
Hardly surprising, a hawkish Praetor mutters. We have the same results from the moons of Saturn.
Pliny continues. Naturally, they fear the repercussions of choosing the wrong side. The Saturn governors are a lost cause for now. They see Rhea's corpse in their sky every day. In the Galilean sector, the presence of Lorne Au Arcos on Europa is a problem. His isolationist political leanings have proven infectious to the arch-governors of Jupiter's moons, particularly since his private army is twice again as large as any of the arch-governors.
Isolation? More like retirement.
Augustus sighs.
Perhaps he has the right of it.
You would go mad, Father, Mustang says from the end of the table. No scheming, no plots or stratagems, just family and time to spend with Adrius and me.
His smile is tight, unreadable.
How well my daughter knows me.
What worries me most, Pliny says, is that the Galileans, in their own words, doubt the validity of our cause.
That's because we don't have a cause,
I moan, remembering my role.
At least not so far as anyone else cares. Explain, the arch-governor demands.
He's getting to it, Father, Mustang says. Darrow plays for drama.
I make a show of looking around the room.
It's safe to say that the gentle ghouls in this room understand human nature, yes? Even if we did not, what motivates us? A cause? No. None of us have a cause. Freedom? Liberty? Justice?
I roll my eyes.
Hardly. What do we care that the sovereign acts like an empress? What do we care about the compact and the liberties it extends goals? Nothing. This is about power. It is always about power. We fight her because we attached ourselves to a star, the arch-governor, but the star falls, fades.
Kavax half rises from his seat.
Don't insult your lord as if...
As if he's what, a fool?
He's not, so come off it.
The Bellona take Mars. They will get the contracts, the government positions. We will be pushed to the fringe, dead or irrelevant. My voice plays with the audience.
Power is the only thing of worth in this world. Consider Tactus Au Wrath, a loyal ally of mine for 3 years. But as soon as my star began to fall, he stole from me and departed at the back door. A thief in the night.
How many empty seats are here that were filled before Luna? So many men and women who would have bled for Augustus. So many men and women who would have given their eyes for him when he sat on his dais in Aegir. Now, I dust off my hands. We are losing. To run is to wither and die.
If we want to rise again, draw the Galileans to our cause, marshal the governors of Saturn to our banners, then we show them we are not powerless. Show them we drip with power. We are arbiters of life and death. We, not the Bellona, are the House of Mars.
Pliny begins to say something, but Augustus motions him to be quiet.
What would you propose?
The Galilean families are soft for Luna for one reason. Commerce. Ganymede has her shipyards. Callisto is little more than a factory of greys and obsidians for the Society's armies. Europa is an ocean world of banking and deep-sea mining and vacation homes.
Io is the breadbasket to any world along Jupiter's orbital path. They depend too much on commerce with the core to run to our side. And even the basest child knows what happened when the Ash Lord descended upon Rhea. The Praetors nod along. So we must impress them. We must terrify them so that they know our power can touch them at any time, and they cannot risk alienating us.
How? Augustus asks.
They're all on the hook now. I set my razor on the table so they know what business I propose.
We take their ships. We take their children. We take them as allies as the Spartans took their wives. By force in the night.
Silence forms around me. Then comes the uproar.
Pliny lets his praetors slash at the idea. His energy he spends whispering in Augustus's ear.
I glance at Mustang, but she watches the others, gauging them.
Boasts! The arch-governor quiets the room and readdresses me. I've not heard a plan.
One plan, two parts.
I touch a datapad, and the hollow the jackal's agents gave me expands over the table to show Ganymede. The moon shines bright with blues and greens from its oceans and forests, brilliant against the marbled white and orange of Jupiter's vaporous surface. Grey shipyards ring the moon. I zoom in so that they stretch across and above the table. I list the ships registered, highlighting one in particular.
Ganymede has a moonbreaker.
Whistles from around the table.
A moonbreaker?
Someone whispers.
Is this information reliable?
Augustus asks.
I nod. Very.
My fingers twitch, rotating the image of the docks. In the shadow of an orbital dock floats a ship like my Pax, but newer, larger. Black as night, and 8 kilometers in length. The sovereign herself commissioned it as a present for her grandson.
Kavax nearly drools at the sight of the monster of a ship. What a loving woman!
Assuming this is not contrived, Pliny inspects the hollow,
how did you come upon this information?
Little birds whisper into my ears, too.
Don't be coy. It is important. My sources are mine, just as yours are your own, Pliny.
So you want to steal the Moonbreaker from Ganymede? Pliny asks. That's an act of war.
I chuckle.
No, you misunderstand. I want to steal all of the ships.
Chapter 26. Puppet Master.
Pliny glances worriedly at Augustus. Do this, and this war does not end till one side is ash.
It's already that way.
Kavax begins. This is different. Pliny crows. It expands the scope.
My father is right, Daxo declares. We are already in open rebellion.
Pliny slaps his hand down.
This is different. This declares war on the society, not the Bellona, not the sovereign as a singular person. Ganymede has not harmed us. This will fracture everything.
Augustus sits quietly, his cold eyes staring at the moonbreaker on the hollow. Without looking at me, he asks,
You said there were two parts to this plan. What is the second?
I change the hollow. The academy replaces the shipyards. Ships ring its dull grey surface. Asteroids rotate in the backdrop.
Those ships are ancient,
a balding praetor named Lysenus says before I can begin.
Useless in a fight.
Is your plan to steal them too?
No, Peter Lysenus. My plan is to steal the students.
I add another visual. Mars's institute joins the academy. Then another institute, Venus's. Then Earth's two institutes. Then the Galilean institutes and Saturn's. Then more, till nearly a dozen images float in the air.
I want to steal all of the students, not to fight, but to ransom.
Gory hell!
Mustang bursts out laughing.
Are you insane, Darrow?
Augustus frowns. Virginia, control yourself.
I am under control, Father. Your attack dog isn't.
You forget your place.
And you forget how Claudius looked dead on the ground. Leto, too. Do you want that for the rest of us?
She regrets the words as soon as they leave her lips.
Shut your mouth, girl!
Augustus shudders with wrath. His bony fingers clutch the edge of the table till it creaks.
You've been unhinged since you let that Bellona boy between your legs. Walking in here like a pixie pump, eating that apple like a child. Stop being a sideshow whore and live up to your name.
Like your remaining son?
She asks. He takes a long, calming breath.
You will be quiet or you will leave.
Mustang grinds her teeth together, but stays uncharacteristically silent. Pliny's lips curl in a rather pleased smile.
Don't blame her, my goodman, if she's already tired of war,
Pliny says, softly placing a knife in a wounded enemy.
After so many nocturnal summits spent engaging in horizontal diplomacy with the Bellona, her stamina isn't what it used to be.
Kavax lunges at Pliny. Daxo pulls him back just in time, but it's Mustang who is first to speak over the uproar.
I can defend my own honour, my goodman. But from Pliny, such insults are to be expected. After all, I would be bitter too if my wife bent over backward to make sure so many of your young mercenaries learned how to properly sheathe their swords.
Pliny stares angrily at her as she rises, continuing,
I left Mars to pursue knowledge in the Sovereign's court. I did not abandon my family, as so many of you have suggested, and I'm not sorry I left and missed conversations such as this. For you goodmen seem good only at one thing, and that is bickering. Yet you quickly come to agreement upon me as an item of ridicule. Curious, is it because you see me as a threat to your power, or is it simply because I'm a woman?
She peers at the few scattered women around the table.
If that is the case, you forget yourselves. This society was founded by men and women based on merit.
The dear Politico Pliny is right, however. I would have avoided this war. In fact, I tried. Why else do you think I allowed Cassius Abelona to court me? But war is here, and I will protect my family again from all threats, those from without and from within.
Augustus lets slip the smallest, barest of smiles, a twin to the first. His love is the most conditional I've ever seen. How quickly he can call his daughter a whore, then smile as she reclaims what power she lost in the room. Suddenly, she matters.
Then what do you think of my plan? I ask.
I think it is dangerous. It spreads the war without ensuring our benefit. It is immoral and sets dangerous precedent. But then again, war is inherently immoral, so we must simply decide how far we want to go.
You know Octavia better than I
say.
How far will she go?
Mustang is quiet for a moment.
If we have a victory and sue for peace, either from a position of strength or weakness, she will accept the overture.
You see?
Pliny beams. Mustang isn't finished.
She will suggest a neutral location, and on that day, when we go to make peace, she will do everything in her power to kill all of us.
Pliny looks back and forth between us, realizing how easily he's been played. So there's no going back. Win or die? I ask flatly.
Indeed, Dara, she says with a smile. Win or die?
It seems you have been outmaneuvered, Pliny. We move forward with Dara's plan. Augustus stands. Tomorrow, Praetor Licinus will take command of this vessel and its fleet and lead the sovereign's fleet on a chase, while I take a small strike group of corvettes and frigates to the gas giants. With them, I will raid the shipyards of Ganymede.
I will go with you, my liege, Kavax booms.
His fox jumps off his lap at the noise to tremble under the table.
No.
Kavax's face falls.
No, but Nero. The defense is there. Battle stations, destroyers, torch ships. They will shred any force of corvettes you bring.
His large hands gesture imploringly.
Let us do this for you.
You forget who I am, my friend.
Apologies, I did not mean...
Augustus waves the apology away and turns to Mustang. Daughter, you will take what elements of the fleet you need to execute the second portion of Dara's plan.
Watching Pliny now is like watching a child try to hold on to a handful of sand. He doesn't understand the course things have taken. But he's not fool enough to make his play now. He will wait in the grass, like the snake he is.
The arch-governor turns to me.
Darrow, what did you say to me before you shed Cassius's blood?
I said that you should be king of Mars.
My friends!
Augustus sets his thin hands down on the table, fingers rigid.
Darrow has demonstrated powers none of you possess. He predicts what I want. I want to be king. Make me so. Dismissed.
The room empties. I wait with Augustus. He wants a private word. Mustang brushes close to me as she passes, winking playfully.
Nice speech, I mutter.
Nice plan.
She squeezes my hand, and then she is gone.
In league again,
Augustus observes. He gestures me to close the door. I sit near him. The hard lines of his face deepen as he stares into my eyes. From a distance, the lines are invisible. But this close, they are the things that make his face. Loss gives a man lines like this, reminding me, this is the man you do not anger, the man you do not owe.
We can do away with righteous indignation before it finds a place on your tongue.
He steeples his fingers, examining the manicured cuticles.
The question is simple, and you will answer it. Are you a democrat?
I had not expected this. I try not to look around nervously.
No, my liege. I am no democrat.
Not a reformer? Not someone who wants to alter our compact to create a more fair, more decent society?
Man is organized properly now, I say, pausing, except for a few notable exceptions.
Pliny?
Pliny.
You each have your gifts, and you would do well not to question my judgment in keeping him close.
Yes, my liege, but I am no more a democrat than you are a loon.
He does not smile, as I intended. Instead, he presses a button, and the speech I used to win over the Pax comes on the speakers. An HC hollow shows the faces of different colors.
Watch their expressions.
He watches mine as he cycles through a series of video clips from different parts of the ship as the crew listens to the speech I gave before they rose against their gold commanders.
Do you see that?
That right there. The spark. Do you?
I see it.
That is hope.
The man who killed my wife waits for my face to give me away. Good luck with that.
Hope.
Are you saying I made a mistake? I ask.
He recalls old words.
Hateful to me as the gates of Hades is that man who hides one thing in his heart and speaks another. My heart has always been laid bare.
So you say. His lips part slightly, hissing the words.
But as terrorists spread lies over the net, as bombings rack our cities, as the low colors rumble with displeasure, as we begin a war despite the termites in our foundation, you say this.
Any chaos is shut your mouth.
Do you know what would happen if the other governors thought us reformers? If the other houses looked at mine as a bastion of equality and democracy?
He points to a glass.
Our potential allies.
He brushes the glass off the table, letting it shatter.
Points to another. Our lives.
It falls and shatters too.
It is bad enough my daughter had the ear of the reformer bloc on Luna. You cannot seem political. Stay a warrior. Stay simple. Do you understand?
What if the low colors rally to us? I want to ask.
But he would have his obsidians kill me where I stand.
I understand.
Good.
Augustus looks at his hands, twisting the ring there. Hesitancy creeps over him.
Can I trust you?
In what way?
A scornful laugh bursts from his mouth.
Most would say yes without thinking.
Most men are liars. Can I trust you with power, autonomous from my own?
He scratches his jaw idly.
That is when many leave their lords. It is when hunger fills their eyes. The Romans learned this time and again. It is why they did not let generals cross the Rubicon with their armies without the permission of the Senate. Men with armies soon begin to realize how strong they are, and they always know that their particular strength is not forever. It must be used with haste before their army leaves them. But hasty decisions can ruin empires. My son, for instance, must never be allowed such power.
He has his businesses.
That is a slow power. Cleverly done on his part, if unfit for my name. Slow power can grind away any stagnant enemy, but fast power, one that can travel where you go, do what you wish it to as effectively as a hammer hitting a nail. That is the power that lops off heads and steals crowns.
Can I trust you with it?
You must.
I am the only man who can go to Lorne.
Surprise flashes in his eyes. He is unused to having his machinations guessed.
He buries the surprise quickly, unwilling to give credit where credit is due.
You knew already. You wish me to approach Lorne, ask for his help, because he taught me the razor.
And because he loves you.
I blink dumbly.
I am not sure that's the word.
He had four sons. Three died in front of him. The last, Lysander's father, in an accident, as you know. I believe you remind him of them.
though you're in fact more capable and less moral, which is to your advantage. But as much as he loves you, Lorne hates me.
He hates Octavia more, my liege.
Still, it won't be easy to convince him to join us.
Then I won't give him a choice.
Chapter 27 Jelly Beans. The Telemannisters wait for me in the hall. Kavax takes me into a hug that cracks my back. Daxo nods his head. I'm left feeling dazed between the two of them. It is the first time I've spoken to either without violence afoot. Truth be told, I've avoided them for shame of what I let happen to Pax.
My boy only ever lost to you,
Kavax says.
Little Pax, if he was to fall to a knee, it is no shame to have fallen in friendship. I only wish he could have taken Olympus with you. That would have been a sight.
I would have liked to have seen him take Proctor Jupiter's armor. Daxo grins. I was Jupiter House myself, Primus till I lost to Carnus Abelona.
Then I believe we have a mutual enemy.
Besides the scheming little bastard that killed my baby brother? Daxo asks softly. We have many shared enemies, Andromedus. Kavax scoops up his fox. It licks his neck and peers fiercely at me before it nuzzles into his thick red beard. It has a white chest, black legs, and dark russet fur covering the rest of its body. Thicker and hardier than a normal fox, and weighing nearly 35 kilograms, it really is more wolf-like in size.
Foxes are beautiful creatures,
Kavax says, stroking the beast. Daxo nods.
Mischievous, omnivorous, resistant to poaching, monogamous. Very special and able to expand their hunting grounds, even in the territory of wolves.
He looks up at me darkly, but because of a damn quirk of nature, foxes fare poorly against jackals.
We asked Augustus to banish Adrius. For a time he was, yet now he returns to the fleet.
A crime, I say. They nod.
Daxo sets a hand on my shoulder.
The girls, my sisters and mother, I mean, wanted you to know that we do not hold you accountable for Pax's death. We loved that little boy, and we know you only ever mean him honors. We know you named your ship for him, and will not forget it. Once friends, always friends. That is our family's way.
Kavax nods. To every word his remaining son says. He tosses his fox a handful of jelly beans.
So, if you need us,
Daxo suggests, nodding to the war room,
you need merely ask, and the House Telemannus will lend itself to your cause.
You mean that?
I ask.
It would have made my Pax happy.
Older Kavax rumbles. I clasp his hand and try my luck. You'll forgive me my manners, but I need you now.
Great eyebrows arch as the two behemoths share a look of surprise.
Investigate, Sophocles, investigate,
Kavax says excitedly. The large fox at his legs slips forward warily to investigate me, sniffing my knees, peering at my shoes and hands. It weaves through my legs in its search. Then it pounces on me, putting forepaws on my hips and digging its snout into my pocket. Sophocles resurfaces with two jelly beans, chewing contentedly.
Magic! Kavax booms, clapping me on the shoulder. Sophocles has discovered a propitious sign of approval by magic! What a good omen! Daxo, my son, summon your sisters and mother. The Reaper calls. House Telemannus must answer!
The girls are visiting Neptune, father. They'll be a few months.
Well,
Then we must answer. Couldn't agree with you more, Father.
I'll have instructions within the hour, I say.
Great anticipation!
Kavox thumps away.
We await them with great anticipation!
He roars compliments at passing oranges, terrifying them with his wide grinning approval. Daxo and I watch on. Does he really believe in magic? I ask.
He says gnomes steal earwax from him at night. Mother thinks he's been hit too many times on the head.
Daxo backs away, following his father. But he can't hide his clever smile as he pops a jelly bean into his mouth. And I see where the ones in my pocket came from.
I say he just lives in a more entertaining world than we do. Call on us soon, Reaper. Father is eager.
After meeting over Hollow with the Jackal, to bring him up to speed on my plan, and adjusting it according to a few of his recommendations, I have Orion set a course for Europa. It will take 2 weeks. Roke joins me on the bridge, watching the skeleton crew of Blues. He doesn't speak, yet it's the first time he's sought me out since we left Luna. It's a weight hanging over my head. I'm sorry, I begin. I don't want to talk about Quinn, he says quietly. I know you wanted this war, engineered it instead of trusting me to buy your contract and protect you. What I don't know is why you drugged me. I wanted to protect you, because I knew I would need you after the gala, and I couldn't risk your safety. What about what I need? He asks. You don't have the right to make choices for me because you're afraid it might interrupt your plans. Friends don't do that. You're right. It was wrong of me. I nod slowly, meaning it. Wrong to stick a needle in my neck. Beyond wrong. But no, the intent was good, even if the idea and execution were as stupid as they come. If I have to get on my knees, there's an image. I know he's joking, but his face does not laugh or smile as he turns and walks away. Chapter 28 The Storm Sons.
You come to me at the head of a storm,
my friend says, grey beard blowing sideways in the wind as he looks at the waves far beneath.
Did you know there are boys here on this ocean world who take skiffs into gales worse than this? Lads from the dregs of the greys, reds, even browns. Their bravery is a mad, crazed sort.
He points out from the balcony with a heavy finger to the roiling black water, where waves crest 10 meters high.
They call them storm sons.
The gravity here is maddening. Everything floats. At 0.136 of Earth's gravity, every step I take must be measured, controlled, else I'll burst upward 15 feet and have to wait to flutter back down. A fight here would be like a ballet underwater. I wear grav boots just to move comfortably. The old man watches the ocean world move around his island. He is, as he always told me to be, a stone amid the waves, wet, yet unimpressed by all that swirls about him. Salt water spray drips from his beard. Burnished gold eyes blink against the storm's bitter wind.
When you are in the salt, you feel like every gale is the world ender. Every wave the greatest that has been. These boys ride the gales in rapture at their own glory. But every now and then, a true storm rises. It shatters their masts and rips the hair from their heads. They do not last long till the sea swallows them whole. But their mothers have wept their deaths long before. As I wept for yours the first day we met.
He stares at me intensely, mouth pinched behind his thick beard.
I never told you, but I was not raised in a palace or in a city like many of the peerless, you know. My father thought there to be two evils in the world, technology and culture. He was a hard man, a killer like the rest of them, but his hardness was not found in what he could do, but in what he wouldn't do, in his restraint, in the pleasures he denied himself and his sons. He lived to 163 without the help of cell rejuvenation. Somehow he lived through 8 iron reigns. But still he never valued life, because he took it too often. He was not a man to be happy.
I watched the former rage knight, Lorn Au Arcos, lean over the balcony of his castle. It is a limestone fortress set amid a sea 90 kilometers deep. Modern lines shape the place. It is not medieval, but a meld of past and present, glass and steel making hard angles with the stone island. So like the man I respect above all other goals of his generation. Like him, this castle is a harsh place when the storms come. But when the storms fade, sunshine will bathe this place, shining through her glass walls, glinting off her steel supports. Children will run its 10 kilometer length, through its gardens, along its walls, down to the harbor. Wind will tickle their hair, and all that Lorn will hear from his library is the crying of gulls, the crash of the sea, and the laughter of his grandchildren and their mothers, whom he guards in place of his dead sons. The only one missing is little Lysander. If all gulls were like him, reds would still toil beneath the earth, but he would have them know their purpose. It doesn't make him good, but it makes him true. He's thick and broad and shorter than I. He lets his empty whiskey tumbler go and permits the wind to swoop it sideways. It falls and the sea swallows it whole.
They say you can hear the dead storm sons whooping in the wind, he mutters. I say it's the crying of their mothers.
Storms of court have a way of drawing people back in, I say. He laughs a derisive laugh, one that scorns the idea that I would know anything about the storms of court, anything about the winds that blow. I came to him in secret, flying with a single ship, my 5 kilometer destroyer, Pax. I told my master he would not help us, but I held on to the hope he would want to help me. Yet now that I see Lorn Au Arcos again in the knotted flesh, I'm reminded of the nature of the man, and I worry. He knows my captains and lieutenants are listening through the comm unit in my ear. I paid him respects and showed it to him, so that he would not assume our conversation to be a private one.
After more than a century of living, my body does not yet betray me.
One would think him to be in his mid-60s at first glance. Only his scars truly age him. The one on his neck, like a smile, was given to him 4 decades ago by a stained in the Moon King's Rebellion, when the governors of Jupiter's moons thought to make their own kingdoms after Octavia deposed her father as sovereign. The one that claims part of his nose came from the Ash Lord when they dueled as youths.
You've heard the expression, the duty of the son is the glory of the father.
I have said it myself.
He grunts. I have lived it. I have lost many for my own glory. I have set my ship into the storm on purpose, each time with women and children in tow.
He lets the waves speak for a moment. They crash on the rocks and then pull backward, slurping as they go, drawing things to the sea they call Discordia.
It is not right to live so long, I think. My great-granddaughter was born last night. I still have the smell of blood on my fingers.
He holds them out, like tree roots, crooked and calloused from the holding of weapons. They tremble slightly.
These took her from the darkness to the light, from warmth to the cold, and cut the cord themselves. It would be a fine world if that was the last flesh they cut.
He relaxes his hands and sets them on the cold stone. I wonder what Mustang would say to this man. Seeing them face to face would be like watching fire trying to catch on stone. She balked at my plan in public, but then again, that was all our design. Plans within plans within plans.
To think about what hands feel,
Lorne mutters.
These have felt the lifeblood of my sons as their hearts pumped it out of their bodies. They felt the cold of a razor's hilt as they stole the dreams of youth. They've worn the love of a girl and a woman, and then felt those heartbeats fade to silence. All for my glory. All because I chose to ride the sea. All because I do not die easily, as most.
He frowns.
Hands, I think, were not meant to feel so much.
Mine have felt more than I'd wish, I say. I feel the snap go through them that I felt at Io's hanging. The texture of her hair. I remember the warmth of Pax's blood. The chill of Leah's pale face in the cold morning after Antonia butchered her. The grainy red smear of Humanthus blossoms. Mustang's bare hip as we lay by the fire.
You're young still. When you're white-haired, you'll have felt even more.
Some men don't grow old.
No Helldiver does.
No, some don't.
He pokes Augustus's lion's badge on my dark uniform.
And lions do not live so long as griffins. We can fly away from things, you see.
He brandishes his own family ring and flaps his arms foolishly, drawing a smile from me. He wears it along with his House Mars ring.
You were a Pegasus once, were you not?
It was the symbol, is the symbol of Andromedus, my false gold family. But the symbol reminds me of Io. She pointed out the Andromeda galaxy to me before she died. It means so much and so little, all at once.
There's honor in staying what you were, he says. Sometimes we have to change. Not all of us are born rich, as you. Let us go find Icarus in the forest.
He mentioned him often on Mars, but I've never seen Lorne's favorite pet.
Carolina conspired with Vincent to make him a new toy. I think you'll appreciate it.
Where are your children? I'd love to see them again.
East Wing, till you leave. I'm that dangerous.
He does not answer. I follow my friend in off the balcony, just as one of Europa's clouds spits blue lightning across the dark sky. Her oceans buck and heave as great swells of water slither and seep along the white walls, as if the world of oceans conspired to swallow the man-made island. Despite all this, the castle and the raging storm still seem so small when I see how Jupiter consumes the night sky behind the clouds, a textured gas giant staring down at us like the head of some great marble god.
As we walk through the stone villa, Lorne happily greets every servant we pass. He sees people, not colours. Most have been with him for years. I should have studied with him. But then I would have ended up here, a better man, but unable to change anything so many months' journey from the core. Children's toys litter the halls. His family is here, dozens of loved ones he brought together after he left public life. Most live scattered in the southern archipelagos, in the warmer waters near the equator. Hurricanes forced them north this month to take refuge with Grandfather Lorne. Seems the storm followed them. He pushes open a grand glass gate, leading me into the centre of his citadel. Here he keeps himself a forest, one several acres large and open to the air. The walls stretch around the forest, closing it off from the vicious waves. Lorne's standards whip high in the air, a roaring purple griffin on a field of snow white. Rain falls on the trees, hissing into their needles until he activates a pulse bubble. Then the rain sizzles on its roof and folds up in thick clouds of vapour. He walks ahead of me, and I linger, taking small black spikes, no longer than my fingernails, from a hidden pouch in my sleeve. I scatter them through the moss just outside the door.
"You came to me in a stolen vessel of war, asking for my ships and my men."
"Why?" Lorne asks, looking back curiously.
I speed up my gait and drop a few more spikes when he turns again. I'm waiting for him to mention Lysander.
"Because half of Mars is still held by forces loyal to the Bellona and the Sovereign. To free Mars from them, we need your ships and your men. Once we have them, the Moon Lords and the Archgovernors of the Rim will come to our aid against the Core."
"So you need me to aid you in your treason?"
"Is it treason for a dog to bite its master's hand when the master tries to kill it?" I ask.
"Terrible metaphor."
He stops, peers around the forest, searching.
"Ah."
We set off again.
"The point is, I need your help."
He spits on the mossy ground and motions me to follow him up a hillside. My boots crack a water-sodden log.
"Why should I care about you?"
"Because you trained me."
"I also trained Aja Grimace.
For some reason, I think you like me more than her."
"And why's that?"
"I have a sense of humor."
He laughs.
"Aja can be funny."
"Surely you're joking."
"You meet a man, you know him. You meet a woman, she knows you."
He laughs to himself about some memory.
"Might be easier thinking her some terror in the night, but she's flesh and blood. She has friends, she has family, and she thinks you a threat to them."
"Yet she's the one who killed my friend."
"Yes, I heard. You had the child. Clever tactic."
He squints back at the razor curled around my arm.
"Does everyone wear their razor like a fool now?"
"It's the fashion."
"It's meant to be looped on the hip. You'll cut your arm off by accident."
He sighs.
"Your generation. So arrogant. Changing things for no reason. I wonder, arrogant boy, did you think that if you rode in here with your stolen ship, that I, a man of a century, would follow you to battle? That I would put in danger all my servants, all my family, all I love, for you? Someone who rejected me when I asked him to join my house?"
I ignore his bitterness.
"You left the society for a reason, Lorne. Can you remember why?" "To avoid loud fools."
"I think you left because you thought the society sick, because it was not worth sacrificing for any more."
"Stop barking at me, puppy."
"So I'm right."
"No, you're not right.
He wheels angrily. I left the Society not because it is sick, but because it is dead. The Society was created to instill order. Men were made to sacrifice so that humanity endured. They were given colors, lives limited and ordered, so that we could destroy the timeless cycle of our race, prosperity to greed to war. Gold was meant to shepherd the other colors, not devour them. Now we are trapped again in that cycle, the very thing we endeavored to avoid. So the Society, the beautiful sum of all human enterprise, it's been dead and rotting for hundreds of years, and those who fight over it are but vultures and maggots.
So it wasn't Brutus's death. I speak of his youngest son, who was married to Octavia O'Loon's deceased daughter.
That was an accident.
A convenient accident, I say. There are rumors that Octavia's daughter was organizing a coup against her mother.
I don't entertain rumors, he says darkly.
If you help me, I can give you your grandson back.
Lysander has been raised so long ago with poison in his ear that now it's in his blood. He is not my kin.
You're not that cold. Lorne, I've met the boy. He's more like you than her. He isn't wicked. Fight for him.
Lorne stares quietly at the rain falling against the pulse shield. You fight a tyrant to replace her with a tyrant, he says wearily. This is the same game I have seen 100 times. Do you even know who you serve?
I have a feeling you're about to tell me.
I'll not stop being your teacher just because you stop listening. Sit. I don't want Icarus to be bothered by this damn story.
He sits on a large stone and instructs me to take a place opposite him.
I do.
He hunches forward and plays with the thick House Mars ring on his finger.
House Augustus was always strong. I'm sure you know that. Even when Mars was little more than a mine for Helium 3. They bribed or killed their way into owning most of the governmental contracts, and as their pockets swelled, so did their influence. They became, along with several other families, including the Bellona and my own, the Lords of Mars. There was one family of greater power, however, named Silas. They controlled the Arch-Governorship and were favored by the Senate and the sitting sovereign. When your master, then simply called Nero, was 7, his father found himself in dispute with Julius Albellona, Cassius's grandfather. Nero's father attempted to have the Browns who served the Bellona poison the entire family at supper. The plan failed. A house war began. Nero's father summoned his bannermen and led them against the Bellona and the Arch-Governor Silas, who had declared his forces for Julius Albellona. The sitting sovereign did not intervene, and instead allowed the two families to go to war. Eventually, Nero's father found himself besieged in Aegea when his fleet was destroyed and captured around Phobos. Silas put House Augustus to death, sparing only young Nero from punishment. He was allowed to live so that an aged family that had partaken in the conquering did not disappear from history. It is said that the Arch-Governor Silas gave young Nero grapes to quench his thirst, because there was no water, as the city burned around them. After that, he raised him in his own court. 20 years later, Nero, who had always been considered an honorable and honest man, much unlike his wicked father, asked for Iona Albellona's hand in marriage. She was the youngest and favorite daughter of old Julius.
He stares up at water droplets falling from the needles of overhanging evergreens.
I knew her well. My sons were her playmates. I knew Nero, too. I liked him, even if he was a little cold as a child. With hopes of mending the lingering wounds of past generations and making Mars strong and unified, Arch-Governor Silas agreed. Bellona married Augustus. It was a beautiful wedding. I attended, representing the sovereign as the Rage Knight, and I had a wonderful time of it. I'd never seen Iona so happy as she was in that stern young man's arms. But that night, when the Bellona family returned to their estate with the rest of their family, a package arrived. Inside, old Julius found his daughter's head. Grapes stuffed in Iona's mouth, along with two wedding rings. He summoned his daughters and sons, including Cassius's father, and flew to the citadel to ask for justice from Arch-Governor Silas, as he had 20 years prior, when the Augustuses first rose up. But instead of his old friend, he found young Nero on the Arch-Governor's throne, backed by Praetorians and two Olympic knights. I was among them, having been told that Silas was a threat to the society by my sovereign. I did as I was commanded. The house of Silas was wiped out and stricken from record. I found out later, Nero contrived an agreement with the daughter of the sitting sovereign. You know her as Octavia Auloon. Younger then, she convinced her father to give Nero the throne of Mars and his revenge. In return, she earned Nero's support when she led the faction that overthrew and killed her father 5 years later. That is the man you started a war for.
I didn't know this, I say quietly. History is written by the victors.
Lorne looks at me, and the lines on his face seem to deepen.
I don't want to go to war, Darrow. In my time, I have seen a moon burn because one man would not bow. I have led a million warriors shot from warships to invade a planet. You cannot begin to understand the horror of it. You think only of how beautiful it will be, but they are men, they are women, they have families, and they die by the thousands. And you will be helpless to protect even the best of your friends.
Ah!
He points uphill.
There's Icarus.
Rain drips from the pines as we push through the lower tree boughs to find Icarus, Lorne's pet griffin, sleeping in a great bed of moss on a high promontory inside the small forest. Icarus's paws curl into his body. His wings curve around him as he sleeps, iridescent and glittering with droplets of water. His great eagle's head is nearly larger than I, one of his eyes half the size of my skull. The carvers made him well.
He looks peaceful when he sleeps, Lorne says.
He's bigger than any I've seen, I say, unable to conceal the awe in my voice.
You've not been to the pole of Mars or Earth, then?
No. Where did you buy him?
Martian carvers made him for my family. Damn that fashionable Zanzibar twit. Icarus is of the same genus as the beasts in the high eyries in Mars's North Pole. The ones they use to terrify obsidians into believing magic is real.
He strokes the sleeping giant.
Are you still in love with the Arch-Governor's daughter?
He glances back at me hopefully.
Is that why you do this? I heard about her and the Bellona.
It isn't about what happened between her and Cassius.
No?
He sighs. I could have understood that, at least.
You were sloppy in that. You should know.
The Arrhenicus folly would have done him in 3 moves.
I wasn't sloppy. I was making a show.
Sloppy. Violets are showmen. Did I train you to be a showman?
I move past him to pet Icarus.
So you do care about me?
He does not answer me for a spell. And it's then that I know the moment I've dreaded most is nearly upon us.
In another life, you would have been one of my sons, Darrow. I would have found you earlier, before whatever happened that filled you with this rage. I would not have raised you to be a great man. There is no peace for great men. I would have had you be a decent one. I would have given you the quiet strength to grow old with the woman you love. Now all I can give you is a chance.
Icarus!
He booms. His griffin stirs by his side, its amber eye showing me my reflection. The sound shudders as the creature moves, uprooting a tree as easily as I'd pull a hair. I move back from the beast, unsure of Lorne's intentions.
What's going on? I ask Lorne.
Look to your ship.
He points upward in the night. Through a break in the clouds, we can see my long ship glittering in orbit. She's no longer alone. 10 torch ships come for her now, slipping around the cover of Europa's equator to capture the Pax.
A Praetorian death squad waits for you inside my home, Darrow. Aja Augrimus leads them. They will take you, chain you, and bring you before the Sovereign.
You betrayed me? I ask.
No. They arrived days ago. They threatened.
What could I do?
Kelenau Bellona leads their fleet. It will destroy or capture your ship. I can't stop that. But I do not want you to die. So Icarus will take you to an island where I have hidden a ship for you. Use it to escape.
Will they hurt your family if I escape?
They may try, he growls. That is the consequence of your decision and mine.
He stands with his back to the sea.
I want to fade in peace. So please leave and never return, Darrow.
He gestures to Icarus, and I see a thin saddle upon the beast.
The new toy of which he spoke. But I do not need to flee. I shake my head for what is about to happen.
I'm sorry, my friend, but I can't allow that.
Allow? He asks, turning. You will join us in this war.
My razor uncoils, whether you like it or not. I speak into my calm, telling the howlers to prepare to rise and the titans to bring the ships around.
The blood drains from his face, and he looks at the beast emblazoned upon my tunic. A lion after all.
Chapter 29. Old Man's Wrath. I prepared the trap before I even left the fleet. All secrets find themselves whispered into Pliny's ears, and he would wish for nothing more than my timely demise, particularly after I provoked him in the Arch-Governor's meeting. So he did his work. He schemed and plotted, and found himself an ally against the big, bad Darrow Au Andromedus in the Sovereign herself, a fact that I will be happy to share with Augustus as soon as possible. The Sovereign's ships hid themselves among the ruins of a derelict space station that was once used as a base of terraforming operations. Kellen Au Bellona was smart, but predictable. My larger secondary force, a detachment of Telemannus ships, which I hid behind another smaller moon's mass, will ambush the Bellona force in 60 seconds, slingshotting around the other side of the moon by using its gravity to gain velocity. With Roke in command, I'll have 10 Bellona ships to add to my personal armada by day's end.
You knew?
Lorne accuses me quietly, his thick hand gripping my uniform at the neck and shaking me.
You knew?
And he knows what this means for him. It is not simply my victory, it is his defeat. One way or another, he must ally himself, and I've made it easy for him to pick a side. If you're a fox, play the hare. Isn't that what you taught me? But it will look like you knew I set a trap for her, that you slipped news of her trap to me. I touch his shoulder as he releases me. I am sorry, friend, truly, but you are part of this war. His jaw works, but he says nothing. The Sovereign will send her Praetorians again to Europa once I have left, I say. Only this time they'll come for you and yours. Their black and purple ships will shell you from orbit till your islands and your cities on the archipelagos and mainland and the rising mountains in the south are made of glass and swallowed by the seas. The waters will weep over your shattered towers, and of your house there will be nothing but crypts in the deep. Unless we win. His eyes seek in me something to give him time, but instead he sees only what made him take me under his wing from the start. Himself. Most men would give anything to see that, but here and now he wishes to see anything else.
I put my family at risk to help you escape. I took you in, taught you, and you betray me like the others, like Aja.
You look for pity. You let me come here, Lorne. You would have consigned my friends above to torture and death even as you gave me a path to escape. But my friends will not be prisoners.
I point upward to the fiery gashes in the night sky as my secondary force rockets around Europa.
Hate me, but fight at my side, I tell Arcos. Only then will your family survive.
I put a hand out for my former teacher. He pulls out his razor.
I should kill you.
Can I come and shoot the geezer?
Severo asks over the comm.
Hold, I tell him. You forget.
Lorne pulls his own datapad from his pocket.
I could have my fleet destroy yours, boy.
Not before mine takes the Sovereign's.
But she would know then where House Arcos stands. She would know that you tricked me, that my house is not part of this.
Then do it, I tell Lorne. Launch your ships if you think my cause evil. Put me down if you think me a monster. I step forward, close to him. But you know the heart that beats inside. Choose me, or choose that darkness. I nod down the hill of the forest garden to where we enter the place. 12 obsidian Praetorians file through the same glass door we used. Huge men and women in black and purple armor, skull helms. Only one stained. This one thinner than the others, like a winter asp standing on its tail. His armor is white and splashed with colors like blood. They are less than 50 meters away. With them, shorter than the rest, but more glorious, is the Protean knight in her golden gear. Her razor shimmers with the colors of a nebula, and her armor writhes like the waves that batter the white walls of Lorne's island. Aja peers up to the night sky, where she sees my ambush unfolding. She lets her helmet recoil into her armor.
"And then the traitors were two," she calls. "House Arcos has embraced treason as well. Lorne, you stand with the lions."
"The House Arcos stands apart,"
Lorne calls back.
"Apart?"
Quinn's killer frowns and tilts her head so I can see the dueling scars on the right of her neck. Her cat eyes scan the woods for signs of a trap.
"There is no such thing."
"I was as deceived as you, Aja," Lorne calls. "Darrow knew you were here. I don't know how, but I am not your enemy.
I want only to be left alone.
That was never a choice,
Azure calls.
You know this better than anyone. You are with us or you're against us, Lorne.
Azure, no. I have no part in this, none.
The strong always have a part, I mutter.
I will not have my hand forced.
He cuts me with a wrathful stare.
I have no quarrel with either of you. I am a man of peace now.
Then why is your blade out?
Azure smiles.
Do what you know. Come down and speak, teacher. We should not shout. Isn't that what you said when I used to raise my voice in anger?
She eyes the griffin that now growls beside us. It's larger than four horses. I wonder what those talons would do against their armor. Our ships are lost, I whisper to Lorne. What would Octavia have her do?
Kill us. For spite.
I lower my voice.
Then you have no choice. So it would seem.
Azure watches me kneel to the ground and gather dirt in my hand. She has studied me. She knows what this must mean. And she must wonder what plan I have. Why I've come alone. If I really set an ambush in the sky, wouldn't I set one below? I'm about to shout something to her when another figure steps through the gate to join Azure. He's rangy, darker skin than mine, a smirk on his bored, patrician face. Tactus. All in Praetorian armor. He slinks forward, a shadow of purple and black, eyeing the sky apprehensively before beaming me a lopsided smile.
Speaking of traitors, I shout. Hello, Tactus. Pretty armor.
Reaper, my good man,
Tactus bellows, and throws up the crooks.
Where's Severo?
He leans in to tell Azure something. Azure straightens and looks around again at the trees. Her men condense in defensive formation. Tactus warns them of my tricks. They know something is awry. Their Aegis shields activate, glittering over arms. Lorne closes his eyes and lifts his left hand into the air, feeling the whipping of the storm's wind.
Leave Azure to me. You'll have better luck against the Stained. No. They're all mine. Severo, rise!
The howlers emerge from the sea beyond the castle. Water drips from them as they fly silently over the 100-meter-high walls, armor glistening like black beetle shells. A golden line has been painted on each breastplate. The gold winks as lightning flashes. They land silently around us.
My storm sons, I say to Lorne.
20 new recruits have come from the families of the Howlers and the Telemannus ranks. Severo held tryouts. I hear it was a bloody bit of fun. Snakes, alcohol and mushrooms were involved. That's all they let me know.
Goblin, why are you always hiding?
Tactus calls. His voice is all jest, but he looks to the sky anxiously again.
Least it's better than a horse's belly this time.
Severo pulls out his skinning knife, the one he used to take scalps with Harpy years ago. It's a curved customer. He taps it on his groin and points to Tactus. His eyes flick to Azure.
You killed a howler, Azure, he says. Wrong play.
As I expected, the appearance of the howlers reassures Azure and Tactus. This makes sense to them. I had soldiers hidden.
Now I do not. A battle to the death. Honor, pride, one force against another.
The obsidian Praetorians begin to keen their terrible throat song. All those men want is the glorious end, to join their relatives in the laughing halls of Valhalla with their blades in hand. They step forward on Azure's command. The deadliest men and women in the solar system are Stained among them. And I take a page from Evie's book. Ensuring Azure is clear,
I detonate the landmine spikes I dropped on the ground as Lorne and I strolled into this forest. Only Tactus is quick enough. He grabs Asha from behind and jerks her back hard, so hard in the low grav that both of them tumble in through the door just as the first explosion rips the salt air. The explosions are tiered. First comes a concussion that disables pulse shields and scatters the Praetorians into the air. Then comes a grav pit, which pulls them back toward the source of the explosion like a vacuum collecting flies. And then comes the third, pure kinetics, to destroy armor and bone and flesh, blowing the warriors outward into the air, scattering their pieces in the low gravity like breath scatters the seeds of a dandelion. Limbs float gently down. Blood beads and spatters the ground. The explosion breaks the bubble roof overhead, and rain again drifts down on the garden to extinguish the fires and thin the blood that leaks into the 24 bomb craters. Only 3 Praetorians survive. They're in poor shape.
"Do not let her escape!" Roke's voice sears my ears. He watches my holofeed from the ships above. My howlers have not yet moved. Lorne's furious with me, saying something about honor.
"What?"
I sneer.
"You think I fight fair?"
"Jarrow!" Several hisses as I wait. "Jarrow!"
"Hold! She's getting away!"
Roke's voice frightens me. It drips with spite I didn't know he had.
"Jarrow!"
I growl at him to pay attention to his part of the battle.
"Jarrow," Severo begs. "Long enough."
Lorne watches, perhaps beginning to understand. I snap my fingers.
"Hunt!"
The howlers surge forward like loosed wolves to finish what the bomb started. They dispatch the remaining Praetorians. Severo shouts Tactus's name amid the howling as they tear into the castle searching for him and Asha.
"Jarrow, what are you playing at?"
Roke asks me over the comm. I let the hollow of his face appear in the corner of my helmet's HUD display. His jaw muscles flicker.
"If Quinn's killer escapes..."
"Lock that up," I tell Roke, as I see reports of one of our torch ships taking massive damage. He's distracted.
"Men are dying up there. Focus on your own job."
I shut off the link. Harpy's image appears on my display.
"Seahorse is under."
"Good. And Tactus?"
"No sign."
"Copy." I close the connection.
"Asha spooked into the sea, but no sign of Tactus,"
Severo says to me several minutes later, as the howlers scour the inside of the castle, going room to room.
"He's hiding. Unless he teleported."
He spits at that bit of science fiction.
"Ask the geezer where they are."
A dark worry slithers into my brain. I turn to Lorne. "What would Loon have them do if they could not kill you and me? If she thought someone expendable, what would she order them to do?" He stands there for a moment in the rain. Then his face goes pale.
"The children."
Arcos pushes past me, running through the bomb's carnage to the shattered glass door.
"They're going to kill my grandchildren,"
he shouts back.
"Where are the children?"
I ask Severo.
"What children? We found none."
Cursing, I chase Arcos.
"I hid them,"
he says over his shoulder to me as he sprints down the castle's hall. He's fast for an old man, but the gravity slows us till we start using our hands on the walls and ceiling, using grav boots to take the long halls. We launch around corner after corner, and when he touches the head off a stone griffin and a steel wall falls away to reveal a hidden passage, I smell blood. 2 corpses lie on the other side of the passage, 1 grey, 1 obsidian. I push past Arcos and fly ahead, pulling myself down a series of stairs via handholds in the ceiling till I find myself before 2 doors. I open one. Just the storeroom. I open another and let my razor slither into my hand.
"Tactus,"
I say slowly. His back is to me.
Three obsidian bodies lie around him, their blood making a pool about his shoes. His razor coils in his hand, hardening as he stands with his head lowered in a room of children and women. Blood slithers down the mercurial blade. When I came, Arcos hid the children from me here. Some gold, some silver, some pink and brown. Tactus could kill half of them with a lazy swing of his razor before we reached them. Tactus, remember your brothers, I say to him, looking at the children. My brothers are shits. He laughs coarsely, voice sounding strange. Said I should get out of your shadow. Mother calls me the Mighty Servant. Did you know that? Children sob in the corner. One buries her face in a mother's lap. The women are not armed. These are not warriors like Victra and Mustang. A brown nursemaid covers a gold child's eyes. I hear Arcos in the tunnel behind me. Loon's orders are wrong, I say to Tactus. She asked me if I could fill your place, Reaper, Tactus says quietly. Said she didn't think I could. Said I was so long in your shadow that she didn't know if I would ever be more than an echo of you. I told her I could do anything you could do. Tactus, she's evil. Is she? He spits blood on the ground, still not facing me. They say the same thing about you. They wonder who you think you are to do what you do. To challenge the men and women you challenge. They wonder what right you have. We all have a right to challenge. That's the point. The point? Was there a point? He asks. I was never told. You took me for granted. Never telling me anything. Just as I'm doing with Roke. Always whispering with others, dismissing me like I'm a fool. You're just like her. Your mother. He says nothing. Arcos edges in beside me. I put a hand out to stop him. Would you kill them if Augustus told you to? Tactus asks me, turning slightly. No, I say. I'd rather die. I didn't think so. She was right. I am the Mighty Servant. I open my hands to him. I don't know what I'm to do now, Tactus. That's a first. He laughs bitterly, voice slurring slightly. Hardly. I didn't know what to do when I whipped you, I say. At the Institute. I didn't want to lose you from my army because of your talents. But I couldn't not punish you. Talents, talents, talents. Then that's the difference between us. Tactus's voice thickens further. Because if it had been my army, I would have killed your arrogant ass. He turns more, and I see the hints of the ruin the bombs made of his face. You know what happens if you kill any of them. He nods to me, then to the Rage Knight, as if saying it'll either be one or the other that does him. I'm not sorry I took Lysander, you know. I don't think you're ever sorry for much. Not sorry. He chuckles and dips a toe in the blood surrounding him. But I think I shouldn't have done it. I was testing you at the Institute, but I wanted to see what you'd do.
if you were worth following.
Was I?
You know that answer.
Am I still? He nods.
Always.
Saying it so pathetically that it feels like my heart has been pulled into my throat. He's a traitor, a liar, a cheat. Yet I see a friend. I want to fix him and make him whole. What am I doing? I have to put him down. But I've done that before with Titus. That cycle erodes us. Death begets death, and evermore. What if I let you live? I ask suddenly, drawing a confused, frantic glance from Tactus. Of course he doesn't understand forgiveness. What if I let you come back?
What?
What if I forgave you?
You're lying.
He turns more, and I see the full measure of what the bomb did to him. His nose is crooked, broken. The rest looks like a cherry stripped of its skin. My friend. I'm not lying. I did not put my faith in Tactus once, and I lost him. Now I will. I'll take the same leap I ask him to take. I step forward. I know there's good in you. I saw your face when those children were killed at the gala. You're not a monster. Come back to me. You would be one of my lieutenants again, Tactus. I would give you a legion to lead when we take Mars. You'll carry one of my standards. But you can't wear that ugly armor.
It is uncomfortable.
He wheezes with a slight smile.
But Sevra, Roque, Victor,
they miss you. I lie. Drop your razor and come back to my army. I promise you will be safe. The razor dips in his hand. One of the children spares a smile at his younger siblings, a hopeful smile. Just leave the children alone, and all is forgiven. I mean it. Deep in my heart, I mean it.
We all make mistakes, he says.
We all make mistakes. Just come back. I won't hurt you. I drop my own razor. Neither will Arcos. I stare at Arcos till he nods his weathered head in complicity.
I want to come home.
Tactus murmurs quietly, pain in his voice.
I want to come home.
Then come home. Tactus's razor clatters to the floor, and he falls to a knee in front of me. He's rasping from pain. Relief floods the room. The children start crying again from the torturous shift from death to life. The caretakers hug their charges, tears making lines on their faces. I go forward to Tactus and motion him upward to clasp my arm. He wraps me in a frantic hug and sobs into me, body shaking, bloody features painting my armor.
I'm sorry,
he says a dozen times. He's weeping hard into my shoulder, clasping tight. His face is such a ruin. And I hug him. Exhaustion fills me. His sadness is like a weight that nearly drives me to tears. Yet I'm buoyed by the strange feelings of having him back, standing with me, gripping me. It's a humbling thing, knowing someone cannot live without you, knowing that though they've betrayed you, they wish for nothing but absolution. And as he clenches my back, I wrap my arms around his armor and try not to cry myself. Even the cruel feel pain. Even the cruel can change. I hope this changes him. He could do so much. If only he would learn. In so many ways, he is the embodiment of his race. And so if Tactus can change, gold can change. They must be broken, but then they must be given a chance. I think that's what Io would have wanted in the end. When, at last, his sobs are done and we part, he stands at my side, loyal as a puppy, looking to me subtly for signs of affection. His hands tremble from the pain of his wounds, yet he watches in silence with Arcos and me as the children, high and low alike, file upward out of the hidden bunker with their caretakers. Pebble comes down to giddily tell us Roke is wrapping up the space engagement. Seeing Tactus's wounds, she pales. I tell her to fetch a yellow. Soon, Lorn, Tactus, and I are left alone in the basement. Lorn looks over to us. Now that the children are gone, consequences. His hands flash faster than a hummingbird's wings. An iron dagger appears, lurches forward four times into Tactus's armpit, where the armor is the weakest. I rush to stop Lorn, but it's already done. He twists like he's wringing a towel, severing the artery, an old man killing a young one. Tactus's ruined face wrenches with pain, and he gasps as though he knew justice would finally find him in the end. Lorn leaves, and I hold my friend as he dies, his eyes fading to some distant place, where perhaps he'll find that peace Roke always wished for him. Chapter 30 Gathering Storm. How long till we reach the rendezvous? I ask Orion on the command deck. Except for our attendants, we are alone in front of the viewports of the Pax, watching my ships cross through space. The newest additions to our fledgling armada are painted white and carry Lorne's angry-faced purple griffin. With them fly the black and blue and silver warships captured from Kellan Aubalona above Europa. Oranges and reds crawl over the exteriors of the metal monsters, mending the holes made by leechcraft and preparing them for the siege of Mars. 3 days till Hildar Station. The other ships will have beaten us there, Dominus. Kavax and Daxo approach from behind. I turn to them and gesture out the repaired windows to the 10 ships of Kellan Aubalona. Thank you for the presents, I say. Your plan, your spoils, Kavax declares. With us taking a percentage, naturally, Daxo adds, smooth as ever, raising his swirling golden eyebrows. 50% finder's fee. I glance at him with amusement. Well, 30%, because Pax liked you. 10%, Kavax booms. I cock my head. You're a poor negotiator, Preta. He shrugs amiably and points in joy to jellybeans on the ground. He tosses Sophocles down, encouraging him to vanquish them all. 20. Daxo splays his hands, movements always seeming to belong to a thinner, more bookish man. That is fair, no? We lost 160 House Greys and 3 Obsidians. Then 30% to compensate you. For friends.
3 ships! What a haggle, Kavax proclaims. What a haggle. Sometimes a man needs a good haggle.
He claps me on the back, making the joints crack again.
If only we had caught Archer, that'd be a spoil to divide.
She fled into the sea, unfortunately. I gesture to Ragnar, who stands at the edge of the bridge. Heard he did well. Pale and tall, he continues looking at me from behind his beard and runic tattoos, appearing as devoid of emotions as Kavax and Daxo are full of them.
The leader of his boarding party was killed. So were the lieutenants. Lots of heads smashed. They ran into some of Kellen's friends.
Kavax says dourly, as he rummages through his pockets for his impatient fox, who claws at his leg for more jelly beans.
I don't have any more, my little prince.
He smiles up at me hopefully.
Do you have any jelly beans?
No. Sorry.
Ragnar there took command. Did himself well, Daxo says.
Took command? I ask. Kavax explains.
There was a kill squad of peerless. Half a dozen Bologna blade dancers, real noble boys, carved up all our golds and most of the obsidians. The stained there collected the surviving greys and a few obsidians and managed to get the ship.
Any of these blade dancers survive?
No.
Ragnar looks at the ground again, as if expecting a reprimand.
Well done, my good man,
I say instead. Both Kavax and Daxo squint at the familiarity.
Worth it to see Ragnar surprise me with a smile, a broad, yellow-toothed grin.
Do you think he could do more? I ask. Daxo hesitates.
What do you mean?
Could he lead, absent a gold? Daxo and Kavax share a worried glance.
What would be the benefit in that? Daxo asks.
I could send him places I could not send golds.
There is no such place.
Kavax crosses his arms. I go too far. I smile to placate him.
Of course. Just a theory. The mind wanders from time to time.
I clap Kavax on the shoulder, and they depart together for their own ship.
You overstepped,
Orion says.
I beg your pardon.
You have ears.
I look down, searching the pale blue tattoos on her dark skin, as if the math there holds the key to understanding her mind.
You're observant for a blue. Because I know how the world works outside my digital sink. Comes from working the docks, Dominus. When you're at the bottom, you have to notice everything.
Which docks? I ask.
Phobos. Father was a docker, born outside the sects. Died when I was small. A young girl has to be on her toes if she wants to grow big in the hive dock cities. It's the only way to beat the monsters.
It's not the only way, I say.
No,
she asks, surprised.
You can always become a monster, too.
Orion turns from the viewport to look up at me. Fierce intelligence burns behind her arctic eyes.
And there's the beauty of space. A billion paths to choose.
I'm spared from replying when the comblue calls from the pit.
Dominus, we've an assault shuttle inbound. It's Virginia au Augustus.
Chapter 31 Coup. Father's captured, she says to me as she storms down the ramp from her smoking ship. She's flanked by several obsidian bodyguards in battle-scarred armor. A dozen greys exit the shuttle behind them. Sun Hua from Luna at their head. They're all lurcher mercenaries, plain and dangerous, the jackal's hunters. Severo eyes them warily. Around us, hundreds of rip wings and a dozen storks sit parked in the bay, large enough a place to swallow all of Lycos's common and her townships. Oranges clamour about the craft, preparing maintenance checks before the eventual invasion of Mars. I greet Mustang with my own coterie. Lorne, Severo, the Howlers, Victra, and Ragnar. Roke did not respond to my summons. I want to rush forward to embrace Mustang, but she's in a rage, spittle flying out of her mouth, dark circles ringing angry eyes. Exhaustion pulls at her face. Pliny has begun a coup. He arrested my brother. My aunt is dead and her children murdered, along with 6 of our praetors. More than 20 of my father's bannermen have sworn new oaths of fealty, and we've lost control of the fleet. I ask Mustang if she's injured.
Injured?
She sneers the word.
As if that could matter. They killed my men. We came upon the Academy in stealth, and as soon as I launched my leechcraft toward the space station and the training ships, a Bellona fleet emerged from behind an asteroid and destroyed every one of my leechcraft. 10,000 men. Dead. They didn't have to do it. They had enough guns on us that we could do nothing but surrender. It was merciless.
Sounds like Karnas, I guess. She nods.
And Pliny. They didn't lead the Bellona on a goose chase. They led them straight into my operation.
Why didn't Pliny just kill you? Severo asks.
A man like Pliny craves legitimacy,
Lorne says from my side, nodding in greeting to Mustang. If she thinks his presence here strange, she doesn't let on.
It's his nature. He came to you beforehand, didn't he?
Mustang shares a disgusted look with my mentor.
The pixie had me put under guard in my quarters as he took my captured fleet to Hildas. During the journey, he came to me and showed me the holo footage of my father's failed raid on Ganymede.
She shudders in anger.
And he said that though my house had fallen to ruin, he would not see my bloodline ended.
The Sovereign and he had come to an arrangement. If he could provide her with peace, then she would provide him with position, legitimacy, and a prize of his choosing. So he batted his pretty lashes at me as my father's ships burned on the hollow, and said he would divorce his wife and allow me the honour of taking his hand in marriage.
I say nothing. The Howlers rumble discontentedly.
And your response?
Victra asks.
Mustang ignores her. He said he always had his eye on me.
She reaches into a pocket, pulls something out, and drops it onto the floor.
So I took one of his.
Severo cackles with Harpy. Lorne makes a sound of disapproval, like he has any ground to stand on in matters of cruelty.
It is good to see you again, Rage Knight, Mustang says. I'm sorry you were drawn into this, but we need you now more than ever.
I'm beginning to see that. Where's your brother?
I ask Mustang, looking up from the eye. Captured. There's more that should be said.
She glances at the oranges and the greys in the hangar.
In private.
Of course.
We'll continue in the war room. I begin.
In due time, Darrow.
Grandfatherly concern spreads across Lorne's face as he turns to Mustang.
My lady, you've been through a trial. Perhaps you should find rest and we could... The Howlers and I back away from Lorne.
Rest! Mustang's voice rises. Why would I need rest?
My mistake, Lorne says politely.
Theodora,
I call. She slips forward.
Coffee, stims, and food in the war room. Enough for 10.
I remember the 2 Telemanuses.
Make it 20.
She laughs accidentally.
Yes, Dominus.
Theodora steps aside to call her staff. Mustang jerks her head at the ship.
Just going to let it sit there.
Chief!
I call to the orange in charge of the hangar deck. Grease stains his beard. He saunters up, wiping burly hands on his orange greasers.
Put that ship out the airlock.
It can be salvaged, the orange says.
I look to Mustang. Did you escape, or did they let you escape?
I don't know. My brother was the one who saved me. His own ship was caught helping mine escape.
The Jackal is full of surprises.
What if there's a bomb in it?
Severo asks, staring at the ship uncomfortably.
It won't be a bomb, I say.
Pliny wants me still, and he wants Darrow for the Sovereign. But more so, he wants your fleet, Darrow. When it didn't show up at Hildas, he must have realized that you'd been warned, or that you were waiting for a code confirmation that he didn't know.
And he figured if anyone would know where I was, it'd be you.
So tracking me is how we will find this fleet,
Mustang says. Lorn looks back and forth at us. When did you two discuss this?
Just now, Mustang says, confused at the question.
Severo claps Lorn on the shoulder.
Don't worry, you're not senile. They're just odd.
Lorn stares at Severo's dirty hand. The fingerless glove is covered with mashed potatoes and bran gravy. Severo's broad smile fades, and he sheepishly withdraws his hand.
I turn back to the orange.
Put it out the airlock, fast-like.
He seems hesitant, keeps rolling onto the balls of his feet.
Unless you've a better idea.
He scratches his head, looking worriedly with all the gold faces staring at him.
The deckhands watch the exchange furtively.
Out with it, Severo barks.
Sure. Well, I could put it out the lock, Dominus. Or, I mean, I could find the scanners and the radiated material, if they went that route. We got some clever nuts and bolts here. Could find them out. And I could put them all in a long-range scout, no problem. Might do nice to let Pliny's hounds go barking in the wrong direction, yeah?
What is your name and world? I ask.
Dominus.
He blinks heavily.
Scyther's my name. Luna. Three girls. Wife works in the Centre for Automotive Development. So we have...
I cut him off.
Do this right, and we'll bring them to Mars and put them up on the Citadel staff, Scyther. You have 10 minutes.
Yes, sir.
He wheels to his men excitedly. I lead Mustang and my coterie to the lifts.
Pliny said he killed you.
She whispers as we walk. Aja and a Bologna fleet waited for us, like we thought they would. I grin sideways at her. Then pull up my data pad.
Orion, take command of the fleet. I want us far from this sector before we have more company.
Severo, summon the telemanosus. I want them in the...
Severo?
I look around for him. He's loitering around Pliny's eyeball some 20 meters back. We turn to look at him, and he shuffles his feet awkwardly.
Can I... He gestures to it.
What?
Mustang asks.
Can I have it?
Mustang squints at him.
All yours.
He scoops up the eyeball and jams it into his pocket, grinning merrily. He runs to catch up.
Collecting the set, hopefully.
Chapter 32. Die Young. Mustang insisted on seeing Tactus before the meeting. Theodora guides us. We find Roke sitting by his body in the ship's medbay. The way he sits with his hands clasped together, you'd think Tactus might still have a chance at life. Perhaps in some other world, where men like Lorne don't exist.
He's been here since Europa, Theodora says quietly.
You didn't tell me he was down here. I say.
He asked me not to.
You're my servant, Theodora. And he's your friend, Dominus.
Mustang nudges me.
Stop being an ass. Can't you see she's as exhausted as he is?
I look at Theodora. Mustang's right. You should get some sleep, Theodora.
A prime idea, I think, Dominus. Always lovely to see you, Domina.
Theodora says to Mustang, before shooting me a cross look.
Master has been rather moody in your absence.
Mustang watches Theodora glide out. You were lucky with her.
She gently touches Rogue's shoulder.
His eyes flutter open.
Virginia.
They grew close in the year we all spent in the Citadel together. Neither could ever get me to join them at the opera.
It's not that I wasn't interested in the music. Lorne simply demanded time.
She squeezes his hand.
How are you?
Better than Tactus. He glances at me. I wager he'd say more if I weren't here. He sees Mustang's state of disarray, brow creasing in worry.
What went wrong?
Once we tell him, he gently runs a hand through his wavy hair.
Well, that is bad. I never thought Pliny would ever be so thoroughly bold.
We're meeting in 10 to discuss plans, I say.
Roke ignores me. I'm sorry about your father and brother, Virginia. They're still alive, I hope.
She looks to Tactus, and her face quiets.
I'm sorry about Tactus.
He went as he lived, Rogue says. Only wish he could have lived longer.
You think he would have changed? Mustang asks.
He was always our friend, Roke says. It was our responsibility to help him try, even if it was like hugging a flame. He looks at me momentarily.
You know I didn't want him to die, I say. I wanted him to come back with us.
Just as you wanted to catch Arja, Roke says, snorting at my expression.
I told you why I did that.
Naturally. She kills our friend. She kills Quinn. But we let her walk away for the grander scheme. Everything costs something, Dara. Perhaps you'll soon tire of making your friends pay.
That's not fair, Mustang says quickly. You know it's not.
What I know is we're running out of friends, Roke replies. Not all of us are as tough as the Reaper. Not all of us want to be warriors.
Of course, Roke thinks this life is a choice of mine. His own childhood was one of leisure and reading, spent going back and forth between his family estate in New Thebes and the highlands of Mars. His parents didn't believe in enhanced learning uploads, so they hired violets and whites to teach him pedagogically, walking and talking in peaceful pastures and beside still lakes.
Tactus didn't sell the violin, Roke says after a moment.
The one Darrow gave him?
Yes, the Stradivarian. He sold it, then felt so guilty he didn't let the sale finalize with the auction house, made them cancel the order. He was practicing in private, shaking off some of the rust. Said he wanted to surprise you with a sonata, Darrow.
The heaviness in me deepens. Tactus was always my friend. He just got lost in trying to be the man his family wanted him to be, when all along his friends loved the man he already was.
Mustang puts a hand on my lower back, knowing what I'm thinking.
Roke leans down now to kiss Tactus once on the cheek and to give him a benediction.
Better to go into that other world in the full glory of some passion
than to fade and wither with age. Live fast, die young, my wayward friend. Roke walks away, leaving Mustang and me alone with Tactus. You have to fix that, she says of Roke. Fix it before you've lost him.
I know, I say, soon as I fix 100 other things.
We sit in the war room in full council, around a grand wooden table. Coffee cups and trays of food litter it. Mustang sits at my side, boots up on the table as ever, while she explains what went wrong with her father's mission. Kavax leans forward precariously in his seat, terrified at the idea of Augustus suffering defeat. He wrings his hands nervously, so distressed that Daxo takes Sophocles from his lap and hands him to an uncomfortable victor. Mustang's voice fills the room, and the hollow Pliny gave her comes to life above the table. A brigade of corvettes rockets silently through space toward the famed shipyards of Ganymede that ring the industrial moon of mottled green, blue, and swirling white. He dispatched a lurcher squad of greys concealed in the belly of two tankers. They disabled three of the defensive platform's nuclear reactors. Then my father came in hard with his ripwings and corvettes, as is his way, burning engines and dropping munitions before curling back around. It was a treasure trove, some 17 destroyers and 4 dreadnoughts in dry dock, most near or at completion. Supposing the ships to be manned by skeleton crews, he boarded them simultaneously. He even commanded the leechcraft that boarded the Moonbreaker with his 2 stained. But the ships were not manned by skeleton crews. There were no crews at all. Instead, they were loaded with Praetorians, grey lurcher squads, and Olympic knights.
And he surrendered?
Kavax asks, in panic. Mustang laughs.
My father? He nearly cut his way free. He killed the Hearth Knight, then he ran into some of our old friends.
The hollow shows Augustus flowing through 12 greys, like a man wading through stalks of high, dry grass. His razor sings and shrieks, sparking against the walls, sliding through men and armour, till he meets another man in armour, the Shade of Flame. The Hearth Knight. There's a flurry of tight lunges, and then red mist. A head thumps to the ground. Then 2 men appear. One in a sun-crested helm, the other, Fichtner, in his wolf-head helm. Together the men kill the stained and put Augustus bleeding on the ground. Lorne looks over at me.
Lady. Mustang. Who was the man in the sun-crested armour?
She's silent.
That's the armour of the Morning Knight. I answer. Cassius. They must have mended his arm, or given him a new one.
Mustang continues. Julii's ships were also there. She looks at Victra. They finished my father's forces off. Severo glares at Victra, taking Sophocles from her as though she couldn't even be trusted with the fox.
Do you feel awkward? You should.
We've been over this, Victra says, sounding quite bored with the accusations. My mother was threatened by the sovereign. She's not political. She cares about money and little else.
So she doesn't care about loyalty? Mustang asks.
Interesting.
Pfah! Agrippina's a wicked bitch, Kavax grumbles. Always has been.
Careful, large one, Victra warns. She's still my mother.
Kavax crosses his burly arms.
Apologies. That she is your mother.
And how do we know you're not in collusion with them, Victra? Daxo asks softly. Perhaps you spy. Perhaps you wait.
How do you trust her loyalty, Darrow?
She could easily have sent word.
Mustang looks at me. I was wondering that myself.
Why do I trust you, Daxo? Are you Kavax? I ask. Either of you would be in prime shape. Earn pardons, earn more territories and monies if you delivered my head to the sovereign.
And your heart to Cassius's mother, Severo reminds me.
Thank you, Severo.
Here to help.
He grabs a drumstick off the table's spread and feeds it to Sophocles. Considering, he takes a bite himself, saying something quietly to the fox.
I trust Victra for the same reason I trust any of you. Friendship, I say, managing to look away from Severo.
Friendship? Ha! Mustang sets her coffee cup down loudly. I'll be blunt. I don't trust a Julii farther than I could throw one.
That's because you're intimidated by me, little girl.
Mustang sits up straighter.
Little? I have a decade on you, darling. One day you'll look back at yourself and laugh. Was I really so foolish, so simple? Additionally, you're not very tall, so I'll call you little.
I don't catfight, Mustang says coldly. I don't trust you because I don't know you. All I know is your mother's reputation is not apolitical. She's a schemer, a briber. My father knew it, I know it, you know it.
Yes, to a degree, my mother is a schemer, and so am I, and so are you. But if there's one thing I am not, it is a liar. I've never told a lie, and I never will, unlike some people.
The arch of eyebrows makes it quite clear what she means.
Bad apples spawn bad seeds, Darrow, Daxa warns. Put your feelings aside on this one. She was raised by a dangerous woman. There's no need to mistreat her, but we can't have her in this council. I would encourage you to place her in quarters till this is over.
Yes!
Kavax raps the table with his knotted knuckles.
Agreed! Bad seeds!
I can't believe you lured me into this mess, Darrow,
Lorne mutters.
He looks out of place here. Too old, too grey to be party to squabbling.
Can't even trust your own counsel.
Crumpy? Low blood sugar, perhaps?
Severo tosses him the half-gnawed drumstick. Lorne lets it flop against the table, unimpressed by the display.
We would hear your wisdom, Arcos,
Kavax says respectfully.
I would listen to your counselors, Dow.
Lorne pops his knotted fingers.
I've got scars older than them, but they aren't completely naive. Better safe than sorry. Confine Victor to our quarters.
You don't even know me, Arcos,
Victor protests, finally pulled out of her chair. You see the warrior in her now, flaring just beneath the cultured calm.
This is an affront to me. I was fighting with Darrow when you were still cowering in your floating castle, pretending it's AD 1200.
Time does not prove one's loyalty.
Lorne scoffs and runs a finger along a scar on his forearm.
Scars do.
You took those fighting for the sovereign. You were her sword. How much blood did you draw for her? How many men did you watch burn at the side of the Ash Lord?
Do not speak of Rhea to me, girl.
Victra's teeth glimmer in a cruel smile.
So there is a rage night beneath the wrinkles and moth-bitten rags.
Lorne surveys her, seeing the wrathfulness of youth in her. And he looks to me, as if to wonder just what sort of man brings golds like Tactus and Victra to his side.
Does he even know me? His eyes ask.
No, he's realizing. Of course not.
Honor in the first, honor in the last. Those are my family words. Whereas you, young lady, well,
The name Julii does not exactly lift one to nobler purpose, does it? You're just traitors.
My name has nothing to do with who I am.
Snakes beget snakes, Lorne replies, not even looking at her now. Your mother was a snake. She begets you, ergo you are a snake. And what do snakes do, my dear? They slither, they wait, cold-blooded, cruel, in the grass, and then they bite.
We could ransom her, Severus says. Threaten to kill her, unless Agrippina joins us, or at least stops pissing all over our plans.
You're a sinister little shit, aren't you? Victor asks.
I'm gold, bitch! What do you expect? Warm milk and cookies just because I'm pocket-sized?
Roke clears his throat, drawing eyes. It seems we are being unfair. Hypocritical, even, he observes. All here know my family is full of politicians. Some of you might even think I come from noble blood and noble seed. But we Fabii are a dishonest breed. Mother's a senator who lines her pockets with agricultural funds and low-colour medical subsidies, so she can live in more homes than her mother did. My paternal grandfather poisoned his own nephew over a violet starlet a quarter his age, who ended up stabbing him and blinding herself when she discovered he killed the nephew, her lover. But that's nothing next to my great-great-uncle, who fed servants to lampreys because he read Emperor Tiberius pioneered the strange passion. Yet here I am, spawn of all that sin, and I wager no one here questions my loyalty. Why, then, do we doubt Victress? She has remained steadfast to Darrow since the Academy. None of you were there. None of you know anything about it, so I insist you shut your mouths. Even when our mother demanded she abandon Darrow and Augustus, she stayed. Even when the Praetorians came to kill us on Luna, she stayed. Now she is here, when we are little more than a ragtag coalition of bandits, and you question her. You disgust me. It makes me sad to be among you bickerers. So if another man or woman questions her loyalty, I will lose faith in this fellowship, and I will leave.
Victor's smile for him is like a sunrise, creeping, slow, then blindingly bright. It disappears slower than I thought it might have. The warmth in her surprises Roke as well, and his fair cheeks are quick to flush.
I am not my mother, Victor announces, or my sister. My ships are mine. My men are mine.
Her wide-set eyes are cool, almost sleepy, but they flash as she leans forward now.
Trust me, and you will find reward. But all that matters is what Darrow thinks.
All eyes turn to me in my silence. In truth, I was not thinking about Victor, but about Tactus, and wondering how easily he could tell that I kept him at arm's length. When I showed him love at first, and he rejected the violin, I grew embarrassed and hurt. So I pulled back. Better if I'd been true to how I felt and stayed the course. His walls would have broken. He never would have left. He could still be here. I'll not make the same mistake again. Least of all to Victor. I reached out to her in the hall, and I will do so in this company.
Chance made us gold, I say. We could have been born any other color. Chance put us in our families, but we choose our friends. Victor chose me, I chose her, like I chose all of you. And if we cannot trust our friends... I look to Roke, plaintively, seeking absolution in his eyes. Then what's the point in breathing? I look back to Victor. Her eyes say a thousand things, and the jackal's words come back to me, as he lay burned on his bed from the bomb.
Victra loves me.
Could it really be so simple? She does all these things not for the Julii way of gain and profit, but for that simple human emotion.
I wonder, could I ever love her? No. No, in another world, Mustang would never be a warrior, would never be cruel. In any world, Victra would always be this. Always a warrior. Like Io, really. Always too wild and full of fire to find peace in anything else.
Mustang notices something pass between Victra and me. Then it's settled, Mustang says. Back to the matter at hand. Pliny waits now with the main fleet. There he has brought all of my father's bannermen to compose a document of formal surrender to the sovereign and a restructuring of Mars. The deal, as far as I understand it, will make him the head of his own house. He, along with the Julii and the Bellona, will be the powers on Mars. Once the peace is agreed upon, it will be sealed with the execution of my father in the courtyard of our citadel in Aegea.
Mustang looks around the table, letting gravity build behind her words.
If we do not rescue my father, this war is done. The Moon Lords will not come to our aid. In fact, they will send ships against us. Vespasian's forces from Neptune will turn around. We will be alone against the entire society. And we will die.
Good. That makes things simple, I say. We take back our fleet, then we take back Mars. Any ideas?